You are listening to Bible Direction for Life, the sermon podcast of Westside Baptist Church in Bremerton, Washington. We pray that the preaching and teaching you hear on this podcast connects the truth of the Bible to your life, that you would learn more about the triune God who made you and what he made you for. And now, here's today's message.
If you would stand with me. Now you can turn to the book of Matthew. We'll be in Matthew chapter 11. I am not taking over Pastor Peter's series in Matthew. I actually debated whether to preach out of Matthew, but then I realized that by the time we get to Matthew chapter 11, it'll be about 3 years down the road from here, and you could all deal with a reminder at that point. That also makes it easy for him to make any corrections that are needed, because you will all have forgotten completely what I've said today. So, Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. Matthew 11, 28, Jesus says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. And ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Dear God, I pray that you would guide my words, guide my lips today as I preach your word. I pray that I would not say anything that I ought not. And I pray that I would give the people what you have given me, and that it would be a blessing to us all. Help us to learn from you now, in your name. Amen. You may be seated. America, after the Second World War was won, was a place full of promise. The war was won, and the young men that had fought so long and so hard came home with joy and having earned honor. The Great Depression that had lasted so long and had scarred so many people was not only over, it was almost completely reversed, as America's economy suddenly seemed supercharged. Jobs that people had just a few years past stood in line for around the corner now seemed to be available to everyone that wanted one. And the American dream seemed to be within reach of just about everyone. The world was not only offering abundance to men either. Women's lives were about to be radically changed from the way they had been. The economic boom made room for myriads of new technologies. People were able to invest in things. They were able to invent things. Capital was available, and new inventions were coming along all the time. These new technologies and ideas promised to solve the problems of everyday life. Tasks that used to take the entire day could now be done in minutes, or they could even do themselves. Laborious sweeping was done away with, as vacuums sped up the mundane task of keeping floors clean. Hours of washing clothes by hand were turned into mere minutes of putting them in the wash. Hand washing and scrubbing dishes was turned over to the automated servants called the dishwasher. The process of feeding a family, which used to mean planting a garden, watering, weeding, pruning the plants, harvesting the produce, fixing meals, canning, drying, salting, dicing, smoking, storing, and who knows what else, now could be reduced to popping a surely nutritious meal into the microwave. Each new appliance and technology promised to take away every inconvenience of life and free up more time than you would even know what to do with. After sending the children off to school and the husband off to work, there really wasn't anything left to do other than to kick back, relax, and enjoy an abundance of me time. Motherhood had become the most restful occupation in the world. So, what happened? I thought about leading you guys along and pretending like I actually thought that this was still the case, but I won't do that to you. I don't need to tell you that this idea is a fairy tale. We all know that the pace of the lives that we live now is frantic and harried. We tell ourselves that this is just the way that the modern world is, and that we'll fall behind if we don't keep up with everybody else. We are well aware that we are living this way, so much so that we have a name for living like this. We call it the rat race. Wendell Berry describes this better than I can. He says, "Our kitchens and other eating places are more and more resembling filling stations, as our homes more and more resemble motels. Life is not very interesting, we seem to have decided. Let its satisfactions be minimal, perfunctory, and fast. We hurry through our meals to go to work and hurry through our work in order to recreate ourselves in the evening and on weekends and vacations. And then we hurry with the greatest possible speed and noise and violence through our recreation. For what? To eat the billionth hamburger at some fast food restaurant bent on increasing the quality of our life. Somehow, even though we know that we have to rest sometime, and we have entire sections of our economy dedicated to helping us rest, we still don't know how. Jesus invites us today to learn from him how to rest. And I doubt many of you will be hesitant or resistant to the idea of having more rest. But I think you'll find that resting well takes far more work than you would think it does at first. As we begin today, I want you to keep in mind all the times that the Bible mentions rest, just as you go through the story of the Bible. How early it mentions this concept. All the way back in Genesis, we see that on the seventh day, God rested from his work. Now, we know that he didn't need to rest. He hadn't run out of energy. He's not stopping in the middle of the creation week or even just before making the biggest creation, man and woman. He stops at the end after he's done everything. He completed all of his work in one go. And yet Genesis makes a point to tell us that he rested. Further on, we see man in the garden that God had made for him. And there, too, we find rest. Man and women are living in harmony, living in a perfect world with all of their needs supplied by the abundance that was at their fingertips. They just had to grasp it. Adam walked with God in the cool of the garden, and all was well. But Adam sinned. And when he fell, he wasn't cursed with something new called work, because he already had work to do from the beginning. He was cursed by increasing his labor, making him earn everything by the sweat of his brow and a bent and tired back. And it was not only the man that had his labor increased. The woman Eve was told that her sorrow in childbearing would be greatly increased as a result of their sin. In short, both men and women were cursed with a life of hard labor. But God did not leave them there. In Exodus, we see that God hears the cries of his people in the bondage of slavery in Egypt. After sending the 10 plagues, God calls his people out of slavery to Egypt and brings them to the foot of Mount Sinai. And when he gives them the commandments that are to define what their service to him looks like, one of the commandments is that they rest on the Sabbath day. They are commanded to rest. Does this sound weird to you? I know it does to me. We don't think we need a command, but yet there it is. But we see that even when we are told to rest, when we have that defined for us, we can't keep even that commandment. Israel did not keep the Sabbath, and some Israelites were even stoned for breaking the Sabbath. They were later told to allow the land to rest every 7 years, and they did not keep that commandment either. The prophets called to them and warned what the covenant consequences would be if they did not turn from the way they were living, and still they would not listen. And after many years of God's long-suffering patience, there finally came a point where he would endure his people's disobedience no longer. Jerusalem was captured by the Babylonians, and the people were taken away from the land that they were promised into a foreign land under the rule of a godless people. All of this had been told to them beforehand. They were warned this is what the punishment would be. Leviticus warned them centuries before what would happen if they did not obey what God had said. Leviticus 26:33 says, "And I will scatter you among the heathen and will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate and your cities waste. Then shall the land enjoy her Sabbaths as long as it lieth desolate and ye be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. As long as it lieth desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when ye dwelt among it. And just in case the people did not make this connection on their own, maybe the writer of Chronicles was worried about the Israelites skipping over Leviticus, just like some of us do today. The writer of Chronicles points this out to them in 2 Chronicles 36. And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. For as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath, to fulfill 70 years. The people had refused to obey the command that God had given them. And so, after many years, he sent them into exile and forced the land to rest. This exile affected the people of Israel for hundreds of years. Even when they came back, they knew that their exile had not ended. They did not have a Davidic king any longer. They were ruled by Rome eventually and despised even in their own land. They knew that they had not come to rest yet. They were still in exile. And it was into this world, with all the expectations of prophecy, that Jesus came, became a man, and offered them rest. Read our text once again. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. And ye shall find rest unto your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. In a world where Jews are despised in their own land, where heavy burdens are all in a day's work, and a day's hard work earns you no more than enough food for that day, Jesus comes and he says, come to me and I will give you rest. Do you feel something within you when he says this? I think there's something deep in us that sees this offer of rest as one defining thing that we're searching for. We all know that we need this. We all know that we can't go forever without rest. The diapers have to be changed. The car needs washed and the bill needs paid. But we know that these things cannot continue forever without stopping. We know that we need rest. But we often cannot see how there can be any rest in the life that we live when the world around us is so crazy. This is something that connects us to Jesus' original audience. Just like us, they were burdened and heavy laden. They have long days ahead of them working in the fields. There was the constant stress of political maneuvers happening around them. And there was the ever-present stress that has always been there, providing for a family. Jesus' words are attractive no matter what age you're in, no matter who you are. Come to me and I will give you rest. Sounds like a glass of lemonade on a hot day. But we must be careful when we hear these words, because our ideas of rest are often very different than what Jesus is actually offering. Verse 29 says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. The rest that Jesus is offering is real rest. It's the rest that we need, and it's what we know we need. But it likely isn't the rest that we're searching for. When we think of rest, we tend to think of a time that we have no responsibilities and we can do whatever happens to feel good at that moment. Maybe when you think of rest, you think of a vacation on a beach in some exotic location. Maybe you're more of a staycation kind of person and your idea of the perfect rest is just spending time at home on the couch, catching up on your reading, or maybe binge watching some TV shows until you fall asleep. Whatever your ideal picture of rest is, there's one thing I can tell you for certain about it. Too much of whatever it is will eventually bore you to death. Tanning on the beach for a day sounds great, but eventually it will lose its charm. Catching up on your favorite shows on the couch sounds great, But eventually, you'll run out of seasons to watch if you don't get bored of the show long before then. 3 weeks of vacation sounds amazing, but eventually, you're going to be ready and raring to go back to work, to move, to do something. You were made to rest, but the rest that we need is often not the rest that we seek. We see in all of these things that we have an idea of what we need, but it's not actually what accomplishes. It's not what satisfies. We see this hinted at in verse 29. Jesus tells the weary and heavy laden not to throw off the yoke and find a couch somewhere. But instead, he tells them to take his yoke and to put it on. There is always a yoke to be worn. There is always a burden that we have to carry. But the burden that Jesus offers us is light, and his yoke is easy. You probably know what a yoke is. If you've been in church for very long, you've heard that you're not supposed to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. You may have seen pictures in Sunday school of animals bearing these harnesses, either singly or maybe attached to another one. Maybe you've even seen Amish driving down the road with their horses. Or maybe someone farming the old-fashioned way with a plow. You may not have personal experience with a yoke of oxen, but you probably have at least seen a yoke somewhere. But to the people that Jesus is talking to, they've not only seen that. They don't only have the firsthand experience with an actual physical yoke that was used to accomplish work. They knew the other ideas that Jesus was referencing here as well. It was common for the scribes and Pharisees to call their interpretation of the law the yoke of the Torah. And this actually started innocently enough. There was a scribe a couple of hundred years before Jesus, known as Ben Sira. He used the image of a scribe wearing the yoke of Torah to describe someone following the wise path. I'll read it to you. I was going to stand away from the pulpit just so that no one is confused, but then you wouldn't be able to hear me. So I will stay here. But this is from Ben Sira. It's not from the Bible. My son, from your youth, choose discipline. And so find wisdom with graying hair. Come to her like one who plows and sows, and wait for her good harvest. For when you cultivate her, you will toil but little, and soon you will eat of her produce. She seems very harsh to the undisciplined. Fools cannot abide her. She will be like a heavy stone to them, and they will not delay in casting her aside. For discipline is like her name. She is not readily perceived by many. Listen, my son, and accept my judgment. Do not reject my counsel. Put your feet into her fetters and your neck into her collar. Bend your shoulders and carry her, and do not fret under her bonds. I think you'll agree with me that this sounds very similar to the book of Proverbs and all its admonitions to seek after wisdom. But you see, even here, that this is a burden that you're supposed to carry. This is something hard, and he's saying, don't shy away from the hard burden. But what started as an exhortation to follow the law and to seek its wisdom had turned into grievous burdens being placed on people. It said that the rabbis had over 600 regulations that you had to follow just to avoid breaking the Sabbath. Remember, God had given the Sabbath to his people to allow them to rest. But we can't allow that, so we have to define what rest is. And surely, down the road, it becomes these 600 heavy burdens. Just for one aspect of the law. Yet when man tries to make sure he's keeping the day of rest, we turn it into a grievous burden. Even in Judaism today, there are prohibitions against pushing the button on an elevator, cooking meat in the same oven as one used to cook dairy, and kosher food regulations that go far beyond anything that we ever find God placing on his people. Later on in Matthew chapter 23, Jesus addresses the Pharisees because of these things. And he says, do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne and lay them on men's shoulders. But they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. When we seek to serve God in our own way, to achieve the reward that we think we can earn, we create burdens that no one can bear. And it's into this world of burden makers that Jesus calls, come to me and I will give you rest. Verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. Jesus said something interesting here. I want you to see it. Jesus does not say to take a yoke. Jesus does not say allow this yoke to be placed on you. He says to take his yoke upon you. The yoke that Jesus is speaking of here is Jesus' yoke. This is not the scribes and Pharisees telling you to go pick up that heavy burden. This is Jesus saying, come to me, walk next to me, wear the same burden that I am carrying. Yoke up next to your master. He's not a taskmaster calling for more servants to do the work so that he may benefit. He's the sovereign God of all the universe calling the weary wretches of this world to come and learn from him, right next to him. When you stop and ponder just who Jesus is, you'll see the difference between what was being offered to the people then and what he is calling them to. When you understand that this is not a grievous master requiring your service, but the very maker of all things who knows your estate, who made you for his purposes and his glory, then you'll recognize that serving him is what you are created for. He knows what you can handle. He knows what is best for you. He has better intentions for you than even you do for yourself, because he knows what you are for. Take up Jesus' yoke and learn of him. He is meek and lowly at heart. He's not asking you to do something that he was unwilling to do. He is the master of the vineyard. He is the Lord of all people. And yet he was willing to come and be made a little lower than the angels to bear a burden that we could not on our own. We can't do it. When Jesus says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, he was describing what he himself was already doing. And because he did, his Father says, ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. When you take up the yoke alongside Jesus, you will learn of him. You will become more like him. And if you are yoked up to Jesus, you will also go where he is going. There's no other option. The very end of verse 29, we see that the result of taking Jesus' yoke and learning from him is that you will find rest for your soul. It would be really easy to pass right by this without giving it much of a thought. But this is not a throwaway statement. This is not only telling us that Jesus will give us rest. As we've learned from Pastor Peter's series through Matthew, Matthew loves to use the Old Testament. And this phrase, ye shall find rest for your souls, is word for word from Jeremiah chapter 6. If you'll turn there with me real quickly. Jeremiah is warning the people of Israel in chapter 6 of the coming destruction of Jerusalem. There's an army coming from the north, ready to heap up a siege mound against the walls and take the city. We're told that Jerusalem is not an innocent victim. Jerusalem is being judged for her sins. Jeremiah says that Jerusalem is full of oppression. As a fountain spews out water, Jerusalem has been sending her wickedness all about her. She's characterized by violence and grief. From the least inhabitant, even to the greatest one, they are given to covetousness. They have sought after other gods, and they've tried to cover this up by saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. But even in the middle of all this, God offers them a chance to turn from their ways and follow him. Jeremiah 6:16 says, thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. Maybe you've heard a sermon on this passage before. I know I've heard more than my share. It's quite common for certain preachers to give a sermon from this passage where they're exhorting their hearers to ask for the old paths. The inference is that the society around them just needs to return to what it used to be. The Christian should avoid anything new and instead just do the things that everyone used to. This would be well and good if what they meant was that Christians should stay away from new theology and different gods. If you were being told that idolatry, oppression, and covetousness were things to turn away from, then we could agree with them wholeheartedly. But in every sermon on this passage that I've ever heard, the old paths that we are supposed to ask for were whatever side things that the preacher happened to think were important. Old paths were turned into wearing a suit to church. The old paths was Southern gospel music and hymns. The old paths was staying out of movie theaters and not listening to the Beatles. And all the while, as they confidently preach on all the new things that you shouldn't be doing, they were completely ignoring what the Bible is actually telling us in this passage. I don't have time to preach a second message to you, so I'll make my point quickly. Jesus is quoting this on purpose. He said his yoke was easy and his burden was light. And instead of heaping up a mountain of things for his followers to accomplish and checklists for them to keep, Jesus said, "Come and follow me." And as we've seen, the result of doing this, the result of taking up the yoke that Jesus shares with you, is that you will have rest for your souls. Jesus was quoting this passage when he said that our souls would find rest, which leads to one thing, one conclusion that we can't avoid. Jesus' yoke is the old path. When Jesus says to take up his easy burden, he's not suddenly changing what they were supposed to be doing the entire time. He's not changing what defines righteous people. He's not canceling the law and lowering the bar. His expectations are not lesser than God's expectations in the Old Testament. God did not require obedience in the Old Testament and then suddenly become a benevolent grandfather in the sky in the New Testament. When Jesus says to take up his yoke, he's calling disciples to run the very same course that God has always called his followers to run. The old paths are not some way of living that could not have existed before the 20th century. What the old paths are, what the Jewish people were to seek to avoid the destruction that was coming, what Jesus was pointing to is that they were rest for your soul. And if you want rest, if you want to follow in the old paths, then you must take Jesus' yoke upon you and learn from him, and he will give you rest. If we follow the path that Christ is leading us in, we will rest the way that God has intended us to. In order to rest the way that God would have us to do, we must constantly, purposefully rest in Jesus' finished work. And this is much harder work than it sounds like. As Christians, we believe that Jesus has accomplished everything that is necessary for us to be considered righteous before God. We know that there's nothing that we can do that will earn us a place in God's presence. All our righteousness is filthy rags, and there is nothing that we bring to the table that can make us worthy. Adam did not keep God's command to eat the forbidden fruit. The Israelites could not keep the Sabbath, and David could not be the righteous king that Israel needed to keep the covenant. Jesus came to fulfill the law in our place, and we are forever grateful that he did so. But even though we know this, still our hearts try to do something, anything, to put God in our debt. You might not think of this way. You've probably never had the thought that you were going to do something extraordinary and earn favor with God. And yet we still almost can't keep from trying. Every human religion out there is based on earning favor with God. Sometimes this is through animal sacrifices. Sometimes it's through human sacrifices. Sometimes this is by giving away all of your goods in order to live the simple life of depriving yourself of every form of pleasure. Still, some others try to earn reputation in the eyes of others, whether this is through building grand buildings, cathedrals, monuments, or even just the simple things of trying to be well thought of by those around us in the communities that we live in. But probably more common than all of this is the guilt that we put on ourselves when we don't measure up to our own standards of what proper living looks like. We pout and we whine when our grades don't reach the levels that we expected to. We gossip behind the backs of our friends as we share the things that we're concerned about. We shed tears for all of our failings and we fear for our own salvation because we don't feel good enough. We don't feel like we've earned the right to be in church. We don't think that those around us should be nearly as certain of God's promises as they seem to be. And all of this, every single one, is because we're not believing Jesus when he says it is finished. Are you resting in the finished work of Jesus? Are you believing what he says to you? Jesus says, come to me. Do you think that Christ can offer salvation to everyone around you, but you and you alone are the only one that has sinned too much for Jesus to save? Jesus says, take my yoke. My burden is light. Do you know your own limitations and wish that those around you would own up to theirs? Are you unwilling to overlook everyone else's failings because you can't let yourself off the hook for your own? Jesus says, learn of me. I am meek and lowly of heart. Whatever is keeping you from resting in Jesus, Jesus is still extending his hand. He looks you in the eyes and he says, come. Do not go to anyone else. Do not look for rest in any other thing. Rest is needed. Don't think that I'm saying that you can't enjoy the vacations that you're granted. Don't feel guilt for enjoying the feasts that God has given you the ability to have. Don't fear enjoying the benefits of man taking dominion and making the cars and dishwashers and even indoor plumbing. But these things are not what can give you rest. The vacation will fail. Your standards will fail. Whatever you're searching after will not be satisfying. If you place your hope in these things, they will fail you. The time off of work will grow old and the relaxation will not satisfy you. There is only one man that can fulfill the rest that your soul desires. His name is Jesus. And what he says to you is come. The reason that the housewives of the 1950s could not just sit around and enjoy the peace and quiet that people were kind of pretending was there in the first place. But the reason they couldn't enjoy that is because they're human. And we're not made to live that way. You're not created to waste your life on your own desires. King Solomon tried. And he came back and gave us a report that said that it was empty and worthless. The housewives that were supposedly freed up to rest knew that they were not finding satisfaction in that rest. And so they and the rest of society all around us careened off to the other side. Now we find ourselves living in a restless world convinced that it can make its own value and its own worth by pressing just a little bit harder, by working just a little bit longer, and justifying it all by saying that they will make up for it with rest down the road, with a vacation that will not satisfy, with a goal that will not feed them. But they won't. The harder you work to be able to rest, without resting in Jesus, the more desperate and unsatisfied you will be. My charge to you today is very simple. The goal is easily said, but it only comes after a hard-fought battle that lasts throughout your life. Believe what Jesus has said to you. Stop your striving and your working. Stop placing your trust in the relaxation that will come just around the corner and make everything else better. Come to Jesus and he will give you the rest that you are seeking for. Rest in him and your work will be truly satisfactory. Don't be like the Israelites who died in the wilderness because they were not believing. God was not pleased with them because they wanted the rest that he offered, but they wanted it on their own terms. They did not want to enter the rest that God was promising them. And so they did not enter the rest of the promised land. They did not find the one they were seeking because they did not know him. Do not be like them and continue in unbelief. Trust Jesus when he offers a place near him. Take up the yoke that he offers and let us strive to enter his rest. There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. For he that has entered into his rest, he also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor, therefore, to enter into that rest. Dear God, we thank you for what you are offering us. I pray that we would see you, we would see your gentleness, but we would see your ability. You call us to come to you. You're offering what we need. I pray that you would help us to break past the pride that keeps us from coming to you. I pray that you would help us to break past the fear that keeps us from resting in you and your promises. Help us to see that nothing in this life is worthwhile if we are not doing it the way that you have made us to do it. Give us rest. Give us peace. Help us to come to you. I pray these things in your name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this message. If you would like to learn more about the Westside Baptist Church, please visit our website, www.BibleDirectionForLife.com. Subscribe to the podcast if you would like to hear new sermons and lessons each week. And remember that a sermon podcast is no substitute for opening up a Bible and reading it for yourself.